everyone. It's your old pal, Sarah Silverman, and welcome back. It's 2023, the roaring 20s, I say. First episode back of 2023. Welcome. Hope your holidays were swell. Mine were. We went away. I never do that unless it's for stand-up, and it was really fun. I skied for the first time in a few decades, and boy, it all came back. I was great. A friend of mine died on New Year's Eve day. She was almost 81. She'll be 81 in she would have been 81 in March. No, I did that thing where it's like, you know, when someone dies in a TV show and they're like, cops are interviewing them and she's like, they're like, well, she loved lilies. And you go like, do they really do that? But I think you really do that. I just did it. Anyway, her name is Pat Delzell. And she helped my mom kind of raise me. She, when my parents got divorced, my mom did a play, Auntie Mame. And she played Vera something. My mom did, like a movie star in it. Ooh, she was so good. And Pat played a character, Agnes Gooch. And they became buddies and like best friends. And Pat moved in to the house with us. And she taught me to read, She was a teacher. And her thing was she could teach anybody to read. She could teach anyone how to read, any age, any kind of disability or different kind of learning. I mean, she grew up, she was an army brat. She moved all around from Georgia, Mississippi, Alaska, Nebraska. And she, I don't think she was a good student or she didn't, and she learned differently. And obviously way back then it was, no one knew about like learning differently or anything. So she became a teacher and she could teach anyone to read. And she also did a lot of community theater. And so that was her group of friends. And she introduced my mom into like a whole other world of like kind of hippie, cool, like potters, like a whole community of like potters, like pottery makers. And skinny dipping and like just living free. Ironically, she didn't live free because she came out on her 50th birthday. We all were so happy for her, but she never acted on it. And she, I think, had a shame around it. Even up until I saw her over the summer, she came to New York to see my show. And she was very secretive about being gay. I don't think she ever acted on it. I don't think she ever had a relationship. I tried to sign her up to our time. I said the word lesbian and it was like I had said the word hijack at an airport or something. She was like, she was so afraid that as a teacher, if someone found out, they would think she was a groomer or something, you know, like just that stigma. It's so scary. And she's, she was elderly and my heart broke that she, I fear, had shame around it, you know, and she was just such a beautiful, wonderful, weird, you know, I grew up with her. She would, she took me to auctions. We'd go to auctions all the time, not fancy auctions. Like, you know, she'd sell her books or she'd, I remember one time I saved up my money and I wanted to buy something. I bought a pocket watch, you know, and we'd go to fairs where she would sell books. She sold used books a lot to make money. She was very quirky. She bought a house when she moved out from living with us. She bought a house that had burned down The house was in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the woods. The whole thing had burned down, so she got it super cheap, and only one room didn't burn, and she just lived in that room with, like, a hot plate. She wasn't a nester. She wasn't into, like, any kind of aesthetic. She was just kind of no-nonsense. And she didn't have any money. I mean, she was a teacher, and it's just, she had a teacher salary, a special ed teacher salary, which is, she just, and then she was 80 and she retired, but she needed to work again. She didn't have money. And after I saw her when she came to New York, I saw that she needed help. And so I just got way more involved in her life. She was living in this tiny apartment with just a mattress on the floor with blankets on it that my mom had given her. They're the yummiest blankets my mom had all while we were growing up, and Pat got them. Anyway, I have some pictures of her I'll put up, but boy, she was so special. I remember I was asking her about teaching people to read and kids or anyone. And she said what she would do is she would do a little recon. She would find out what they were interested in. And then she would, you know, if a kid loves fishing, or say a kid loves fishing, she would have a book on fishing. But she wouldn't go like, here's a book on fishing. It would just be like on her table somewhere where they might notice it. But she wouldn't reference it. She acted like she didn't know their hobbies, nothing. And she would just talk about reading. And they'd go, what is that? Oh, this is a graphic novel about fishing. Let's look at it. You would trick them into being interested in something and wanting to read about it.
Well, that's right. You'd find out what they're into. Comic books, or they're into, you know, fishing. Then you'd get like a fishing book.
Just kind of put it on the table.
For them to find.
See what they do.
Oh, that's genius. Genius.
So that's Pat Delzell. She also could sing like a motherfucker. Yeah, she was thinking about, she had a cat, Boo Boo, and she was thinking about writing a song about how Boo Boo will start with her eyeballs when she's dead in the apartment. But she deteriorated really fast, you know. It was like, we were talking, you know, every day and FaceTiming, and she got real sick. She got real confused. I had hooked her up with some good insurance. And she emailed me or texted me and said, I need C insurance. I have A and B, but I need C. And I got on the website of her insurance, and I looked into it, and then I called, and the woman was helping me. I go, she said she needs C and she needs it by Wednesday. And then I got Pat on with us, and we were on for almost an hour, and the woman's like, you have all the coverage. I mean, I made sure to get everything she could need. And I said, Pat, what doctor told you you needed C? And she said, the TV. It's those fucking commercials that play on the TV over and over and over again and take advantage of elderly people. Ugh. Makes me crazy. They're like, what? They just kept playing it. She goes, they just kept playing it. And they said I needed it by Wednesday. It's just so hard to watch this woman who was kind of like whip smart and quick, and she still was funny all the way to the end, but get hoodwinked by these fucking scumbags. Anyway, but she just went into decline. Her friend Maggie, who's wonderful, called the ambulance. She went to the hospital, and it was very quick, and knowing like there's really nothing they could do for her, and she went into hospice. I talked to her. We FaceTimed every day. You know, it's scary seeing someone in the hospital. She was scared. It was a new place. She was a woman of ritual. She liked her little space. She liked being alone. She liked taking care of herself. So this was all stuff that she didn't feel natural to her. She didn't like it. And she was getting a little paranoid and, you know. But in the end, it was mostly just FaceTimes of us just going, I love you, I love you, I love you. Kissing each other and saying, I love you. And I told her stories about being a kid and stories about her and what I would remember. When I was a kid, she'd take me to entertain nursing at nursing homes, and we'd dance and sing, and, you know, she really turned me on to a lot of musical theater and stuff like that. And so her dying wish was she wanted to be cremated and put into little red glass bottles and then have those, you know, like four or five glass bottles live somewhere on the stage at the Concord Players, where she would do all her plays. So they're going to do that. And I found some bottles, little red glass bottles that are a little bit, each one's a little bit different. And we'll put some of her ashes in there, and we'll live at the Concord Community Players, where I played Annie when I was 12. I just remember it was very New Hampshire. It was wonderful. Like, I had a VHS of it that I saw like 10 years ago. And it's just so great. Like, Daddy Warbucks is like, Annie, I want to be a father. Yeah. Anyway, so there you go. Pat Dalzell, March 22nd, 1942 to December 31st, 2022. I love you. There you go.
Here's some ads.
Chime, baby. What's the first thing you do when you wake up? Is it checking up on your credit score? I didn't think so. At Chime, that's exactly what they do. With their secured Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can start to build credit with your own money. Chime reports your payments to credit bureaus to help you build credit over time. Their members see an increase of 30 points on average. All of this with no annual fees, large security deposits, or credit checks to apply. So what are you waiting for? Start your credit journey with Chime. Sign up takes only 2 minutes and doesn't affect your credit score. Wouldn't that be awful if signing up affected your credit score? Does not affect your credit score. Get started at chime.com/Sarah. That's chime.com/Sarah. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by Stride Bank, N.A., pursuant to a license from Visa USA. Chime checking account and $200 qualifying direct deposit required to apply for the secured Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card. Regular on-time payment history can have a positive impact on your credit score. Impact to score may vary, and some users' scores may not improve. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal fees may apply, except at MoneyPass ATMs in a 7-Eleven or any Allpoint or Visa Plus Alliance ATM. Magic Spoon, baby. Who was it who just tried Magic Spoon cereal and called me and were like, oh my God, it's sugar cereal that's good for you? I was like, I know. Let's see. Let me tell you about Magic Spoon. It has replicated your favorite childhood cereals to taste good, but each serving contains 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 net grams of carbs. It is keto friendly. It's gluten free. It's grain free. It's soy free. And it's a way to relive those moments watching your favorite cartoons. Plus, it's only 140 calories a serving. It's like there's magic in every spoonful. Wink. Let's see. I love the maple waffle. The maple waffle. That's hard to say, maple waffle. The maple waffle. But they also have flavors like cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, muffin, honey nut, cookies and cream, cinnamon roll. Head to magicspoon.com/Sarah to grab a custom bundle of cereal and try the magic for yourself. And be sure to use our promo code Sarah at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they will refund your money, no questions asked. I say if you don't like it, get the chutzpah to return it. I always feel like they're counting on you not returning it. Return it, but you won't because you'll love it. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/Sarah and use code Sarah to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
And we're back.
Ooh, what was I thinking about today? You know, this whole, like, drag queens reading to your kids outrage is just so fucking absurd. You fucking old SOBs were fine with Uncle Milty. You loved Bosom Buddies. So what's the difference here? Don't know? Well, I'll tell you. What your problem is you're afraid drag queens are gay. You want your drag queen straight because that's comedy. You think when they read to your kids, they're going to groom them to their way of life. You learned the word groom. Now you're running with it to serve your bigoted views. Jesus H. I mean, really? You think they're going to read like a Mother Goose and somehow it will groom your children to be drag queens? In what world do you see this scenario playing out? Besides the fact that you should be so lucky if your child grows up to be whoever they are without shame. How do you see this going down with your five-year-old as grooming? Have you observed a single one of these events? Or just from outside the doors on the intimidation line outside of the library? I mean, talk about scaring your children. I mean, come on. If a bunch of bro dads dressed up like a lady or a mommy to read to your kids, you would have no fucking problem with it. You'd think it was hilarious. That's how you can tell that your discomfort with all of this is homophobia, kid. And the idea that if gay people are around your children might turn gay is as absurd as thinking that all the gay kids out there who grew up surrounded by straight kids would turn straight. You know, sexuality is something that's explored when you're of a sexual age. You are sexualizing gay, queer, trans people. You are sexualizing drag queens. Do you sexualize the nice lady who teaches your kids at their school? No, why? She's most likely a sexual being with a sex life. Oh, right, because you know she would never bring that part of herself into a classroom with children. So why would anyone else do that, you fucking hockey pucks? What are you like? You're afraid your kids will become a clown if you hire a clown for their birthday party? And be around clowns? And by the way, I would be more afraid of a clown grooming my children than a drag queen. Clowns are fucking terrifying. If I had to treat a group of people as a monolith, as one thing, and trust one group with caring for children or teaching children how to be kind, or how to be funny, or how to be okay with themselves just the way they are, and to know what really matters in life, it would probably be drag queens, because they've learned all of these things, likely in a much harder way than y'all, and they know the value of it. And all of you in a tizzy over this are either shitty political leaders inventing something to build a nice manipulatable hysteria, or you're the people being manipulated into hysteria over something that is lovely. Let's take some calls.
You left me a message. Now I'm playing it for the world. Let's hear some voicemail.
Hey, Sarah. Big fan. I'm calling because I need some advice. I was always the independent one the one who would fly off and move to other countries, who kind of marched to the beat of my own drum. Now I'm 35, married with two kids, and have fallen into very traditional societal and gender expectations. It's not because I have a demeaning husband. He's absolutely wonderful and supportive and a wonderful partner, but his job makes the most money. Therefore, I am at home most of the time, raising our kids, cooking, cleaning, doing all of those domestic things that I swore to myself that I would never do. I'm trying to find other things just for me, you know, places like Instagram and creating content. And I do have a part-time job, but I'm finding myself growing increasingly resentful. And I don't even really know what who, to be honest. It's just the way the cookie kind of crumbled. So I would love some advice or encouragement or something, because it's really starting to eat at me.
Interesting. I don't know if I can help. Let's see. I mean, you know, your life is the result of your choices, and that's, you know, that's both good and bad news, you know, but the good news is you have, you're going to be the result of your future choices as well. And that could be anything. What's your passion? You know, my best friend is a single mom with a full-time job, and she just up and moved to Costa Rica with her 7-year-old son, and they are just living an adventure. It was a rash decision. Rash or brash? Rash? A rash decision. She's a therapist, actually, who has been working mostly on Zoom, so she was able to be anywhere and keep her patients, her clients. And she found a school for her kid and just leapt. I'm not saying the answer is moving, because, of course, anywhere you go, there you are. But you may be freer than you know. What do you want? What's your passion? How can that fit into this wonderful family you've made? You know, yeah, you got a husband and you've got kids. They're all part of the team now. So there's your happiness and there's like your family happiness. Dream on it. There are options. Maybe you want to find a purpose, a passion. You know, if you're working part-time, maybe you can campaign for a local politician that you really believe in. That would be fucking great. You know, you'll make friends and have inside jokes with them and work towards something you believe in. You know, you've got skills, you've got talents that could probably be wicked useful to others, which in turn might really light your fire. You know, what gives you joy? You got to ask yourself these big questions. I don't know. Listen, I get enough adventure from my morning shit. So personally, and you know, listen, I get it, what you're saying. You know, this is different, but like when Rory and I are like cleaning the kitchen after dinner and watching Jeopardy, that's like my happy place. But I get adventure in my life, so maybe it's different. I don't know what the ideal life looks like to you or for you, but that's what you got to figure out. That's your job right now. Sounds like you need to discover a passion, meaning maybe there's something in you not being expressed. So find out what it is. Kids need happy parents.
Here's some ads.
Apostrophe. Oh, this is an ad for Apostrophe. You know, I just this morning redid my like quiz for Apostrophe, because I did it 2 years ago, and now I don't have those issues, because they fixed them. So now I want to just go like, how do I moisturize deeply? I have dry skin. That's pretty much it. It's just dry and needs much moisture. And I wouldn't mind some sort of tightening situation, although I'll find out what they recommend. I haven't gotten my, I just sent it in and then a doctor responds to you. It's amazing and it's very personal. That's why I'm excited to partner with Apostrophe. They are a sponsor of this episode. Whether you are dealing with breakouts. They're big with acne. They're big with wrinkles, signs of aging, acne scarring they can address. Apostrophe's mission is to empower you and help you feel confident and comfortable in the skin you're in. Apostrophe is an online platform that connects you with an expert dermatology team to get customized acne treatment for your unique skin. Apostrophe offers access to prescription treatments for all types of acne, from hormonal, to facial acne, and even back, chest, and butt acne. Simply fill out an online consultation about your skin goals and medical history, then snap a few selfies, and a board-certified dermatologist will create your initial customized treatment plan. We've got a special deal for our audience. Get your first visit for only $5 at apostrophe.com/Silverman when you use code Silverman. That's a savings of $15. This code is only available to our listeners. To get started, just go to, I love that it's only available to our listeners. How do they know you're a listener? They probably have to quiz you, like, what do Rory's pubes feel like? Okay, you're a listener. To get started, just go to apostrophe.com/Silverman and click get started. Then use code Silverman at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thanks, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. Guys, did you hear that? You know what that means? That's your sign to this year. Finally, forget about those run-of-the-mill resolutions and instead start your own New Year's revolution. It's the sound to start selling on Shopify, baby. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're selling dildos or chocolate candy, you know, it. I mean, the copy goes, just make something up, and I got to it, and then that's what it came to, dildos. And whether you're selling, whether you're selling boots or posters. I don't know. Whether you're selling bras or handmade diva cups. I don't know. Shopify simplifies selling online and in person so you can focus on successfully growing your business. Packed with industry-leading tools, ready to ignite your growth, Shopify gives you complete control over your business and your brand without having to learn any new skills in design or code. You know what's great about Shopify is that, like, no matter how big you want your business to grow, Shopify is there to hold your fucking hand and empower you with the confidence and control to revolutionize your business, take your business to that next level. They're like a partner, but they don't take 50%. Now it's your turn to get serious about selling and try Shopify today. This is possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Sarah, all lowercase. Hey, even the S? Yes. Go to shopify.com/Sarah to take your business to the next level today. Shopify.com/Sarah.
And we're back.
Hi, Sarah. So I'm in college right now. I'm getting a degree in healthcare management. And for the past year, I just don't care about, you know, just graduating and then climbing that corporate world ladder and stuff, because I mean, I feel like nothing really matters, and especially with all the things happening in our country and in the world, you know, I feel like my goals I used to have and I guess my dreams for future, a better future, are now kind of bland. I feel like, you know, I'm putting all these effort into getting a bachelor's degree, and it feels like, you know, nothing really matters, you know, whether I graduate or not graduate. So, like, I want to hear your advice on how do I put all these dark thoughts and kind of start caring again. Thank you.
You know, I've talked about feeling like nothing matters a lot. And boy, I really hear you. And kind of the big picture version of it and the smaller picture version of it. Now, my experience with nothing matters is it's what gets me into depression, and it's what gets me out of depression sometimes, because I just go, who, nothing matters. Who cares? And then what gets me out of it ultimately is, oh, who cares? Nothing matters. I really believe this feeling will pass. That's the one thing you can guarantee. It doesn't, you know, maybe this feeling is helping you realize that's not the major you want, or that you don't want to be in college, or, you know, for what you want to do in life, you don't need this degree. Or maybe you, you know, healthcare management, like you're like, who cares? Like maybe you want to study something that can make a difference, you know, or I don't know where you're at or exactly what's going on. I will say, like, I just talked to my doctor. I had to meet with my doctor for my pre-op, for my tonsils, but my general doctor. And he mentioned something so interesting, that he was a English major, and he took a course in his English major, in his like writing, not writing, yeah, like English literature or something. And part of the literature they were reading was early medical stuff that he found fascinating. And that's what made him want to go switch and go to med school. So you don't know where your inspiration is going to come from. And maybe this is inspiration hiding itself in a why am I in healthcare management? Maybe you want to be in healthcare. Maybe you want to be in something completely different. But so I don't know what exactly the details. All I can tell you is, yes, this feeling is going to pass. It also might come back. Probably will. So what you have to learn is how to manage it. I don't know all your details, so I don't know if you're on medication or if you need medication, or that's not a piece of it at all. So let's just put that element aside. You feel things, and those feelings and thoughts can paralyze you. And it's okay when that happens. You just have to go through the motions. Sometimes you just have to go through the motions. You know what I mean? You don't have to negotiate with yourself if it's worth going to this class or to participate in X, Y, or Z. Just go. Learn shit. Don't fall behind, because I feel like you're basically, that just makes a decision for you. You're just like piling up, getting behind, and then, you know, it makes things worse for you. You want to be able to take real stock in yourself and make real mindful decisions that aren't based on like, well, I'm like 2 months behind on this class because I haven't been going to it, you know? But when you're feeling like you're in more of a solid place, consider what it is that's getting you down. Try to really figure it out. Like that nothing matters feeling that has you in this rut, like it was for me, can be the same notion that pulls you out of it. Don't worry about it. Nothing matters. So find your joy. Otherwise, what's the point? I know it's scary to feel like who cares. It can feel like a real free fall, but you will care about things, and you do care about things. Find them. Find what those things are. Become aware of them. But again, in the meantime, while you're in the meat of this helpless feeling, it's okay to just go through the motions until you're motivated enough to find your passion, whatever that is. One great thing to do when you're feeling helpless is help others. Volunteer a little time towards something outside of yourself. I know this advice is all over the place, and that's why I am not a professional. But maybe you connect with something here. Maybe something I said connects with you. Great. It's also okay to wallow a little. I'm all for wallowing until things pass. Like, listen to that depressing mix that you made. You know, like I have like, you know, playlists just for like wallowing. Just don't be enrolled in college and fall behind. You know, if you decide college isn't for you or it's not part of your plan, that's one thing. But do not pay for something, especially knowledge, and squander it. Knowing stuff always comes in handy. Anything. Any knowledge is good. All of it. Good luck. Most of all, know that you are not alone. And there are groups and there are hotlines to call. And by the way, maybe volunteer at a suicide hotline. You know, you will learn so much in training for that. And you will learn so much in helping others. All right. Now I'm just like throwing shit at a wall, but there you go. Good luck.
Hi, Sarah. It's Stevie in Austin again. And I was just responding to Gage. And I really like your response, but I have something to add to it. I'm 38. And for a long time, I was the same way. I felt very sensitive about things. And my friends would even say, hey, you can dish it, but you can't take it. You know, I could make a comment, but when they would like make a jokey comic back, I would get really upset and take it to heart. And I use a lot of weed because sometimes weed makes you very apathetic to things. And then I had to be on antidepressants. And I just really hated the idea. Like I liked having emotions more than not having emotions. And I really, you know, I went to therapy and I realized that, you know, being sensitive is a gift. It's hard. It's difficult to be sensitive, but it really helps you be in tune with things. And it just takes practice. Gage shouldn't be afraid of like a situation that is upsetting and like blows up. He should really practice on trying to be present and learn that his feelings are like a gauge, like a compass. They tell you things. They can lead you the right way. They can be bad, but it's better to have them than not. And to be upset how sensitive you are isn't going to help. But accepting it and working on when you do feel upset and you start to spiral, you know, like ways to prevent that, you know, like I don't listen to emo music anymore. Anyways, good luck. I love y'all.
All right. Yeah, sure. Yes. Cognitive therapy. Totally. Even if you're put on antidepressants, as I am on antidepressants, talk therapy is crucial to partner with that. But yeah, figuring out, you know, taking misplaced anger and finding its root and figuring out where it's coming from. You know, I have a hang up. I'm always afraid people will think I'm lazy. You know, my mom suffered from depression and at a time way before we kind of really knew what that was. And we all learned to label her as lazy. And now when I feel pulled that way or say I'm tired from work, you know, say I'm just exhausted or I need to bank sleep hours or I need extra rest, I feel immense guilt. And if Rory innocently says something, you know, commenting on it, I get super fucking defensive, and it has nothing to do with him or what he said, but it triggers a hang up in me, you know? And being aware of that has been very helpful, but it's more helpful retroactively where I go, oh God, I'm sorry I snapped at you. I'm sensitive around that stuff because X, Y, Z, but I haven't gotten to the point where I don't get to that defensive place, you know? Yeah, at least I'm at a place where I'm mindful about it, that I have shit around the idea of being lazy or not doing my part, and that's my shit, and no one else is thinking this about me. So yeah, therapy is key, and how, not like that was my one issue in therapy. This is just like something I'm dealing with now, but therapy is just really key in helping to understand yourself and adjust or practice adjusting accordingly. And yes, being sensitive is wonderful and special. And in terms of empathy and care, even with maybe especially with your own self. But, you know, you want to practice making sure, or at least wondering about whether your sensitive reaction is reacting to what is really happening or maybe a bag or two of your own stuff that you're bringing to the party, right? So with Gage, he got very knee-jerk angry at his friend. And when he really thought about it, it wasn't because of what she did, but of what he thought that meant she thought of him. And that's irrelevant, you know? So I thought it was very interesting. Anyway, I feel like I just said a giant jumble of words and hopefully it made sense to you or someone. All right. What else? What do we got?
Hi, Sarah. Patrick here from the UK. Wanted to give a little bit of advice for your caller who was asking about how to raise a boy and avoid toxic masculinity. I think the one thing I would say is that it's all enforced by gender stereotypes. So the sooner you teach kids that they are not right, that's the best thing to do. For example, boys like blue, girls like pink, boys like football, girls like dolls. Kind of letting kids know that they can like what they want and it's okay is such a big thing at that younger age. And the sooner they learn it at a younger age, the better, because they're going to come across it in school and they're going to find those challenges. But if they're supported and told that it's okay from a young age, they accept it. So, yeah, I hope that helps. Also, little things like boys don't cry. Yes, they do. It's okay to cry. And it's okay for a girl to want sports. So, like sports, I mean. So, yeah, hope that helps. I think I've just rambled on randomly. But, yeah, anyway, love the pod. Keep it up.
Yes, sure. Straight up honesty. Why not? I think that's great. But in a way, I wonder if you deal with those things as they come instead of preparing what might be said in a school, because what's happening in schools today is not what it was happening in schools when we were growing up. Maybe there are kind of evergreen things still going on, male, female, but I know in some schools, it's like not that way at all. In some schools, it totally is, you know, gender shit and But so there might be a reason to be more reactive about like seeing what they're learning and then correcting it if there's something to correct, than preparing them for what you think is going to happen in their schoolyard or their classrooms. Does that make sense? All right. What else? Anyway, nice. Sure. Yes. What else?
Hey, Sarah. I wanted to know if you've ever noticed and if you have any thoughts on something that I've noticed anecdotally. And I'm asking you this because you're a person who is a comedian of, you know, the sort that shitty critics have described as potty mouth. So I know that you've spent a lot of time thinking about word choices with regard to
it's all about scatological
subject matter. And something that I've noticed anecdotally is that it seems like Jews say duty, white Gentiles say poop, and black people say doo-doo. I was wondering if you've ever noticed this, and if so, if you have any thoughts on why it might be. Personally speaking, I'm Jewish, and you know, I've grown up in a duty household. I don't know what my parents did before I was around, but in my day, we were a duty family. And you're a duty-saying person at times. I just wondered if you had any thoughts. Peace out, I guess.
Yeah, we were a duty family. But I'm from New Hampshire, and I didn't know Jew. I mean, but in our family, we said duty. I don't know if it's a Jewish thing. Maybe, but it might be regional. It might be like Northeast. Might be like New England in the tri-state area says duty, but... Wait, I have two Goyim people right here, Arvin and Raj. And is Dustin here? All right, so what was your duty? What was your word for duty?
I guess in poop was the most common one in Texas.
Yeah. Okay, poop. Pooping in Texas?
I feel like the Korean translation would have been just poop.
Poop.
Okay, say, poop. Say, and like you say in Texas, Raj, so it's like it's not like cultural Indian, it's Texas, Texan more?
I mean, in our house, I would assume we use like more of the Indian term, but which is different.
What is it?
Chi-chi, I guess.
I mean, it's like pulling teeth with you. In Texas, we said poop. I mean, chi-chi's, you're burying the lead here. Well, my brother-in-law is Indian. He must say chi-chi.
He might. There's many.
But he's like Indian from India. You're Indian from Texas.
Yeah, that's true. There's different languages there too. I wouldn't be shocked if he's heard it.
He's definitely heard it. I cannot wait to ask him about chi-chi. I need to write that down. All right. Well, there you go. Poop and poop. Still, if anyone has thoughts on this or information on cultural versions of duty, please call in. In the meantime, Dad, guess what? We're winding down. It is time. It's that time of the podcast where I say subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, and check us out on YouTube if you like watching. Goodbye. See you next week.
Hey, I wanna
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, ya fucker.